Good morning, ladies. Good morning, everybody. It's wonderful to see everybody here this morning, even though I'm sitting in my study in our apartment here in Yerushalayim. And as Zmira just mentioned, we just celebrated our first anniversary of Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. So it's just 1 year here in Yerushalayim. But it's wonderful to be here. Yerushalayim is magic. And to learn and teach Torah here is an amazing privilege. Of course, this year, today is Erev Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and usually at this point, we're all swinging into action for Pesach. This year is a different Pesach for everybody, and I'm pretty sure most people are feeling a little bit overwhelmed with how to proceed with regards to Pesach. For most people, I think the word Pesach itself presses certain buttons in one's mind, especially for the ladies of Klal Yisrael. And somehow this year, it's going to be different. Manishtana Hashona Hazos, HaPesach Hazos, Mikol Hashonim. This year is going to be different. Everything about Pesach will be different. And my guess is for most people, the Seder night will be much smaller, and you can't spend Seder night with all the children, grandchildren, family, and young people as you might normally do it. So it needs maybe a little bit of extra effort to make Lel Seder meaningful. So I'll be speaking about that. It also means that in terms of cleaning for Pesach, we're going to do it differently. I think there's a session later on. You should speak to your Rabbonim about this. But a lot of what we do for Pesach, we clean in such a thorough way because of many of the chumras of Pesach, which are part of the Maseiros of Klal Yisrael. However, in times such as ours, there are many leniences, and one should take as many shortcuts as possible in order to make the house chometz-free. Cupboards that you don't intend to use over Pesach, you just put a sticker on them, not for Pesach use, you don't even clean them or touch them at all. Rooms in which you don't normally eat, you just have a quick look and a brush around there, and you just don't touch them at all. The kitchen needs, of course, cleaning out, but the cupboards and the items you don't intend to use for Pesach, just put a sticker on them, not for Pesach use, and concentrate on preparing a few work surfaces and kalim that you can use over Pesach, and speak to your own Rabbonim. I'm not here coming to Paskin Shilas for you, but one has to do it this year in a way which is more streamlined and less machmir, in order to make it possible in order to enjoy Pesach properly. At the end of the day, the main mitzvahs of Pesach are the somachta b'chagecha, the mitzvah of Simchas Aregel, and this year it's going to be hard, Simchas Aregel, because we're a bit overwhelmed by the magefa that we are with. I'd like to say something to start off the shiur. There's something very interesting about Seder night, about Lel Seder. Can you hear me, everybody? Everybody hear me? Everybody, can I see a few nods if you can hear me? Yes, is the sound coming nicely? I'd like to see just a few nods, please, if you don't mind. Thank you very much. Okay, so it's just a bit disorienting for me to give a shiur in my study and not in the company of participants. I'm not used to that. Okay. What's interesting is that the original Seder night, the 15th of Nisan at Yetzias Mitzrayim, the Pesach Mitzrayim itself, took place in the midst of a plague. That Klal Yisrael was surrounded by a plague. The Pasuk in Shemos chapter 11, Pasuk 1, refers to Makas Bechoros as a nega, nun gimel ayin, which means a plague. And the Torah says, Oid nega achas, this was the final and ultimate plague that HaKadosh Baruch Hu brought on the Mitzrayim. And what did the Jewish people have to do in order to be protected from this plague? Because don't forget, Pesach is referred to in the Torah, Seder night is referred to as Leil Shimurim. The idea of it being a night of protection is a central theme of the Leil Seder, the Leil Shimurim. So there are two things that Klal Yisrael had to do. The first one was, Ish al Yetzim mi Pesach Beiso ad HaBoker. Everybody had to be in isolation. You had to stay indoors and not go out into the street. This is a pasuk in Shemos chapter 12, Posuk 22, I think it is, that the Posuk tells us explicitly, in order to fulfill the first Seder night, Klal Yisrael had to isolate themselves from the plague. So in a sense, what's happening to us now is a replay of the original Pesach. We are surrounded, unfortunately, by this, by a nega, by a plague, and everybody needs to take absolutely all precautions, even if this means not spending time with children and grandchildren and young people as one normally would do. And that is part of the nega that we have at the moment. So it's interesting that we have a similarity, a precedent for that plague in the Seder night itself. The second thing, of course, Klal Yisrael had to do was ulakachtem agudas ezov, to take some of the ezov grass and sprinkle the blood on the doorposts. And that was the protection. What did that represent, the blood on the doorpost? That's a very interesting subject, far beyond what I want to do in this shiur. I just want to touch upon it because it's relevant at the moment, the plague that we are surrounded by, the nega that we are surrounded by. So he said that actually the blood on the doorpost were the merits of Klal Yisrael, the zechuyot of the Jewish people, even though they didn't have Torah yet, it was before Sinai, but they had two mitzvahs to do, which the Chazal referred to as Dam Pesach and Dam Milo. And it's both the slaughtering of the Korban Pesach and the Bris Milo, which they had to do in order to be able to eat the Korban Pesach. And they took that blood together and put that on the doorpost. And that was a reminder to everybody of where they were and what was special about that night. It wasn't just a question of physically relocating out of Mitzrayim and physically being free. It was a question of a new way of life, which was defined by the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the mitzvahs were the Korban Pesach, which was a denial of the pagan life of the Egyptians and a demonstration of disconnecting from paganism. And the Bris Milah was a sign of identifying with Klal Yisrael and connecting to the Bris Avraham Avinu and the Ovis, and to make oneself fitting to receive the bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because Rashi brings down, in chapter 12 of Shmos, Rashi brings down that actually the time had come for the Geula, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu had promised the Geula to Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov, had promised it to Moshe Rabbeinu, v'otzeisi v'tzalti v'galti v'lokachti. It had already been promised. It was Higia Eis Doidim, to use the Pasuk in Yechezkel, Rashi brings down. But nevertheless, the bracha couldn't happen unless Klal Yisrael were ru'uyim lekabel. Klal Yisrael had to be worthy of receiving the bracha of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Ramchal in his Sefer Derech Hashem says it's a general principle of Hashkacha throughout the ages, in every situation, that very often HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to bring a bracha, and he wants to bring a geula and a yeshua. And the difficulty is not that HaKadosh Baruch Hu needs, so to speak, in inverted commas, to be convinced to bring the geula and the refuah. But what's important is that we are ro'oi lekabel. We need to be worthy recipients of the Birkas Hashem. And that was the blood on the doorpost showed that every household that had that blood was a worthy recipient of the geula. So here we have two factors, both of which I think are relevant to us today. One of them is the isolation and keeping indoors in order not to be affected by the nega outside. It's interesting that Rashi brings down on that pasuk that the text of Rashi is kivan shenitan reshut lamashchit eino mavchin ben tzadik l'rosha, which means once HaKadosh Baruch Hu had activated the plague, if you were in the place of the plague, eino mavchin ben tzadik l'rosha, that the plague doesn't differentiate between tzadikim and rishayim. You've got to isolate yourself. You've got to take all the precautions necessary to make sure that you're not there when the plague is taking place. And that is if you like, kita aleph. That's the first stage. The second stage is to have the zuchuyot, to have the mitzvahs of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which enable us to be worthy recipients of the geula. I'm told that actually I'm a bit of a newcomer to this Zoom technology. And maybe some of you are also newcomers to this way of learning and teaching. I'm told that eventually I'll learn how to flash texts up on the screen in order to, instead of giving you a text in your hand, which is what I always do in Shurim, to put texts on the screen that you can read the psukim that I'm quoting. I'm myself still only in Kita Aleph in terms of this technology, but maybe we will, we're all a bit on a learning curve about how to manage this. So that's one point. The other point is there are other examples in the Tanakh about plagues, and in each case they needed a zechus, they needed a certain merit in order to be released from the plague. There's another very interesting example, which I'll just touch upon, even though it's a subject for a whole Shia, and that is the closing chapter of Shmuel Bet, the very last chapter of the book of Shmuel, which is really the closing year of David HaMelech's life. He has one very unfortunate incident where David HaMelech decides to count the Jewish people in a way that is forbidden. And as a result of which, the Jewish people get a plague, there's a nega. And he wants to know how to deal with the magefa, with the plague that struck the Jewish people, and many thousands of people died. In the end, if you look at the closing posuk, actually, of the whole of the book of Shmuel, you'll find that what he does is he's instructed to go and purchase the land on which the Beis HaMikdash will eventually be built. The purchase from Arivana HaYavusi, the purchase of the Goren, which would become eventually the Har HaBayit, this took place in the closing words of the book of Shmuel, and was the solution to the Magefa. That was the Zechus that was needed in order to value the Har HaBayit. And according to the book of Shmuel, he paid 50 shekel for it, but according to Divrei HaYomim, he paid 600 shekel for it. The interesting differences about this story between the book Sefer Shmuel and Sefer Divrei HaYomim, which for those people who are Tanakh enthusiasts, you will know that Divrei HaYomim often gives us a slightly different angle on lots of the stories and the events in the Tanakh. Al kol panim, he needed that zechus, and once he had bought that place, which would eventually become the Har HaBayis, and he brought a korban on it, that vateotzar, the final words of the book of Shmuel is, vateotzar hamagefa me'al Yisrael. That stopped the plague. So we need the Yeshuas Hashem keheref ayin. As fast as it came, that's how fast it will go. And Bez Hashem, this Pesach will be not just a chag, but also a reenactment of the Geula of Mitzrayim. And we will find a way, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will have Rachmanus on us and on the whole of mankind. And it will dissipate as fast as it arrived. Okay, let's have a closer look. What I'd like to do is have a look at the Haggadah, because the Haggadah is the key for Leil Seder, and it could be that this year you will need to make extra efforts to make the Haggadah meaningful, because you will have fewer people at your Seder table, and you have to maybe generate some knowledge and enthusiasm in the Haggadah. You have to generate it yourself. Nobody can be a spectator this year. You can't just sit back and watch other people say Divrei Torah at the Seder night. You have to do it yourself. And just incidentally, since this is a ladies' shiur, it's important to mention that the mitzvahs asei min haTorah, one of the let's put it this way, the two main mitzvot min haTorah of Seder night are mitzvahs for men and for women equally. There's no difference between the obligation of women and the obligation for men on these two mitzvot. One of them is eating matzah, and the other one is Sipur Yetziat Mitzrayim, telling the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim, because the Torah says Vehigadeta Levincha. That's where we get the word Haggadah from, because the Pasuk says Vehigadeta Levincha, to tell over the story in its depth, in its details, in its implications, in its understanding, and not just to tell the story, but to reenact the story of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And normally, as I say, you might have a whole group of people around the table who could help you do that. This year, there's probably far fewer people around the table. And it's a once a year mitzvah, which is to recount the Geulas Mitzrayim. And we need that zechut. We need that merit in order to be able to go forward as Klal Yisrael into the next year, the simcha and the bri'ut in the best way possible. So first of all, before I even give you any perushim, I would strongly recommend to all of you to spend time. We have more time this year because we're not running around shopping. We're not running around driving or traveling. So you have a bit more time. Spend time preparing yourself for Seder night. Take out a notebook, make some notes, take out from your house. I'm sure in most of your houses you've got some Haggadahs, maybe some Haggadahs with a perushim, with explanations. If you haven't, then you can find them online. Lots of very interesting shiurim about the Haggadah and about Pesach. Prepare yourselves that on Seder night, you can tell us, you can say Divrei Torah. To whom will you say them? To whoever is there. It doesn't matter. The Igalat to Levincha, there's a mitzvah to tell the story to anyone who will listen to it. And if there's no one there, you tell it to yourself. That's the mitzvah of Leil Seder. V'afilu kulonu chachamim, kulonu nevonim. Even if we all know it already, we think we know it already, in actual fact, we don't. We need to look at it closer and look at it deeper in order to find a way to make the Leil Seder meaningful. One Dvar Torah which I'd like to share with you, which is particularly relevant in a ladies' shiur, comes from the Shloh HaKodesh, Yeshaya HaLevi Horovitz, one of the great Mekubolim and Poskim of 300-400 years ago. So he wrote a sefer called the Shnei Luchot HaBrit. That's why he's called the Shloh. Shin Lamed Hei is Rashi Tavis of Shnei Luchot HaBrit. So he says something very beautiful based on Kabbalah sources, that the Arba Kosos represent the Arba Imahot, that the mothers of the Klal Yisrael, the mothers of the Jewish people, are represented by the Arba Kosos, in the same way, incidentally, as the three Matzos represent Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, the four Kosos represent Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah. And this idea is not just an idea it's not just that there's four kosot and four imahot, but he goes through the Haggadah that each one of these kosot has a thematic link with one of the imahot, one of the imahos of Klal Yisrael, one of the matriarchs of the Jewish people. Each one of them is connected to one part of Seder night. So I'm going to spend a few minutes now. We're going to look through the Haggadah and look through each case and why that has a connection to one of the imahos. And before you drink the kos, this is my suggestion to you on Seder night, before you drink each kos, say something about one of the imahot. Say something about Sarah before you drink the first kos. Say something about Rivka before you drink the second kos, Rochel before the third kos, and Leah before the fourth kos. And you will see that the whole of Seder night suddenly becomes much more meaningful. And you can do a bit of homework about Sarah, Rivka, Rochel, and Leah, certain aspects of their lives, and maybe certain women later on in Jewish history who emulated the strengths of Sarah, Rivka, Rochel, and Leah. This is not just what I'm about to tell you now. It's not just a vort. It's not just one idea, but actually is a major way of making the whole of Seder night much more meaningful and bringing into the Seder night the tremendous spiritual power and strength that the Arba Imahot, the matriarchs of Klal Yisrael, gave us. Incidentally, of course, if you're going to make the first cup of wine meaningful, it means saying something before you start Kiddush on the night of Seder night, because once you've said Kiddush, you immediately drink the first kos. So if you want to make it more meaningful, in general, I would suggest to you all, usually Shabbos and Yom Tov, the first thing you do is you start saying Kiddush. Yeah. On Seder night, that's not the way to start. Before you start saying Kiddush, you have to tell everybody, before we say Kiddush, this Kiddush is different from every single other Kiddush of every Shabbos and Yom Tov the whole year round. It's different in many ways. First of all, it's the only one where we have to wait till nightfall in order to make Kiddush. Normally, we can make Kiddush earlier than nightfall. But apart from that, that's just a technical halachic issue. But apart from that, when we everybody has in front of them a full cup of wine, which is not the case in any other Kiddush during the year in any other Shabbos or Chag. Everyone has a full cup of wine. And at the end of the Kiddush, everybody has to drink their cup of wine, preferably leaning a little bit to the left. That's the mitzvah of Haseva, which is a different subject. You can look it up, exactly what it means and why it's done. But everyone drinks their own cup of wine, leaning a bit to the left. Incidentally, I say a cup of wine. In my house, for the first cup of wine, we don't drink wine. Some of my guests over the years have expressed a bit of astonishment about this. But in my house, the first cup of wine is only grape juice. We only serve grape juice. No one gets any wine for the first cup of wine. After several years of experience, I found that giving people a cup of wine at the beginning of Seder night makes them a bit drowsy or woozy or hypes them up and has an effect which is detrimental to the understanding and the meaning of Seder night. So in my house, it's only, the truth is in my house, we only serve grape juice for all the Arabicosis. We only use grape juice because drinking wine for people who are not accustomed to drink a lot of wine, most of us are not so accustomed, only makes people a bit drowsy and affects negatively their ability to participate in Seder night. So my suggestion is stick to grape juice. You'll enjoy Seder night much more. But certainly the first kosos, do not give people wine. Give them just grape juice. Gedolei Yisrael, Chazon Ish, the Brisker Rav, only drank grape juice. This is a much better way of focusing on the meaning and the purpose of the Haggadah and the Seder night. And that is something which I highly recommend. But apart from all that, before you start saying Kiddush, say something about Sorah Imenu. There's a lot to be said about Sorah Imenu. If you have a bit of time, do a bit of research. Every one of the Imahot brought a tremendous amount of spiritual strength into Klal Yisrael. Each one of them represents a certain model of immense spiritual and human energy and determination and clarity and spiritual strength. And I think each one of the Arabicosos represents one of the Imahot. So for example, this is what is written in the Shlach Kodesh, that when we start the Kiddush on, I don't know whether you're, we have the minhag to sit for Kiddush, the original halacha for all Kiddush is to sit for Kiddush. Some people stand for Kiddush. If that's your minhag for generations, then do so. If you don't have a minhag, the best thing to do for Kiddush is to sit. That's the Shulchan Aruch and the Mishnah Brura saying we sit for Kiddush, except for Vayechulu. That's only on Shabbos, not on Yom Tov. So we sit for Kiddush, and before we start, we say this is the first of the Arabicosis, and it represents Sorah Imenu. And what's the connection? Because the opening words of Kiddush for a Yom Tov is Asher Bochabonu Mikol Om, Veromamonu Mikol Loshein, Kiddushanu B'Mitzvosof. And this is a reference to the chosenness of Klal Yisrael, which of course was Avram and Sarah. Avram and Sarah were the ones who were chosen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose Avram and Sarah. And Asher Bochabonu Mikol Om relates particularly to Avram and Sarah. They were the founders of the whole of our life of Emunah and the founders of Klal Yisrael. And of course, we often speak about the chosenness of Klal Yisrael. This in itself is a whole topic. I've given many talks on the subject. It's a very interesting subject. But I'll just say one word here, and that is that we often speak about us being chosen, but actually Avram and Sarah were the ones who did the choosing. They chose. It's only because they chose a life of Emunah and Yirat Shamayim and a life of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They did the choosing. So Avram and Sarah chose to go against the stream, to go against the whole materialistic and pagan environment, and to live a life of Emunah. And therefore, Asher Bochabonu Mikol Om is particularly appropriate for Sarah Imenu and for her strength. the second kos is drunk at the end of Maggid. So between the first kos and the second kos, basically you tell the whole story of Sippur Yetzias Mitzrayim. The whole story of understanding the story of Yetziat Mitzrayim takes place between the first cup of wine and the second cup of wine. The second cup of wine is drunk just before we start the meal. When we make the brocha, Asher Go'alonu V'Golas Avoseinu V'Mitzrayim, the brocha at the end of Maggid, that is the second case. So before you make that brocha, before you say Asher Go'alonu V'Golas Avoseinu, that's the time to speak a little bit about Rivka. So do a bit of homework and find out something interesting to say about Rivka Imenu and what was the strength that she brought to Klal Yisrael. So just one detail, which I'll suggest to you, is that one of the themes in the Sippur Yetzias Mitzrayim, which I'll come back to in a moment, is the phrase which starts, Mitchila Obdei Avodah Zorah Hayu Avoseinu. V'achshav Kerevanu Hamokom La'avodasa. There's a paragraph which begins with these words, originally, our origins were pagan origins. What's that a reference to? Says the Haggadah, Terach Avi Avraham. Avraham's father and grandfather were pagans, were worshipping idols. And then we made a spiritual journey which brought us to Har Sinai and the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is Rivka is the most powerful example of somebody who made that journey. Somebody in modern terminology, that would be the idea of a Baalat Tshuva. Rivka is the paradigm Baalas Tshuva, that she grows up in the house of Lavan and Besuel, surrounded by paganism, and she chooses to do something different. She chooses to become the wife of Yitzchak and build a bayis Ne'eman to build a Jewish home. So Rivka, in that sense, is a model of mitchila ovdei avodah zarah hayu avoseinu, that she started off her life in a pagan household, in a pagan environment, and she made the journey to become to live a life of emunah, and to become the wife of Yitzchak and the mother of Yaakov Avinu. So also Rivka's activity in the beginning of Vayishlach, where she manages Yaakov and Esau the way she does, and she gets the nevuah that Yaakov is the continuation, not Esau. Rivka plays a very vital role in the future development of Klal Yisrael. So that's Sarah and Rivka. The third kos we drink for Birkat HaMazon, for benching at the end of the meal. So benching at the end of the meal needs to be benching at the end of the meal needs to, before you start benching, say, I want to speak a little bit about Rachel Imenu. Because Rachel Imenu is the third kos. Rachel Imenu is symbolized by the third cup. And this is something which is essential to appreciate this third cup of wine or grape juice, as the case may be. So what is it? What could be a connection between Birkat HaMazon and Rachel Imenu? So the Shlach HaKadosh says that one of the great achievements of Rachel Imenu, which connects her to benching, to Birkas HaMazon, is the fact that Yosef, her firstborn son, her main son Yosef was provided sustenance for the whole world. He provided sustenance in a time of famine. He was the one who knew how to provide sustenance for the whole of Egypt, and indeed for the whole of mankind at the time. Yosef's genius, Yosef's brilliance in providing that. The Torah uses the word hu hamashbir. Now you might think that mashbir means a department store, right? In Israel today, the mashbir. But actually, the word mashbir is a posuk in the Torah describing only one person. It's describing Yosef, because he was the source of sustenance in times of famine, and he kept the Jewish people alive and the whole of the Egyptian people alive, as you know from the end of the book of Bereishis, Vayigash Vayechi, we find Yosef engaging in using his brilliance to manage that. So that's the connection to Birkas HaMazon. And that is the strength that Rachel Imenu gave us through Yosef to provide sustenance, to provide food and energy, and the ability to keep Jewish families and Jewish communities alive and well and sustained, even in times of famine and even in times of plague. This is the power of Rachel Imenu. There's more to be said about Rachel Imenu, but this is not a shiur about Rachel. I'm sure you've heard shiurim about Rachel. But whatever you know about Rachel Imenu, the time to plug it into Seder night is just before benching, just to give the third cup of wine a special meaning. And then afterwards, we say the end of Hallel. And at the end of Hallel, we drink the fourth cup of wine. And the fourth cup of wine refers to Leah. And Leah has lots of things to be said about her, but primarily is the issue of her singing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And when she gives birth to her fourth son, Yehuda, she says, "Hapam oideh es Hashem." This time, I know that I have to dedicate my life to praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the word Yehuda means praise, praising God. And that's what Leah was famous for. So the whole concept of saying Tehillim and singing the praises of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that spiritual strength that we get from Tehillim and from Psukim de Zimra and from all the different types of Tehillim that we say, this connects us to Leah. That is the strength given to Leah. Now, I've done this very, very briefly. Each one of the Imahot, of course, is a subject. Each one of the Imahot is a subject for a whole Shia. And indeed, I'm sure you've heard Shia about the Imahot. But what's beautiful about this Shla HaKadosh is it's an opportunity to raise the level of our understanding of Seder night by plugging in to each one of the Arba Kosos, whatever we know about the Arba Imahot. And that was because on Seder night, don't forget, the Jewish people didn't yet have mitzvahs. They didn't yet have Tariag mitzvahs. But they did have one thing. They knew about Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, Sarah, Rivka, Rachel, and Leah, that they knew about. And that gave them strength. They knew they were descendants of these wonderful Avos and Imahos. And because of that, they were able to put the blood on the doorpost and follow Moshe Rabbeinu into the Midbar, Lechtech Achrai Bamidbar, and to stand in Har Sinai. And that was the foundation of Klal Yisrael. And therefore, I think that the speaking about the Imahot, speaking about their uniqueness and their inner strength, I think that is really a way to add meaning and significance to your Seder night. As I'm saying to you again, especially this year, I want everybody to pay attention to this particular point. Especially this year, you're likely to be at a Seder night without too many people because we don't get together in large meetings and we don't mix with our grandchildren because they might be carrying a virus and inadvertently infect us. So sadly, this year, we're going to be isolated. What I'm saying to you is, in a form of isolation, it demands from every one of us to dig a bit deeper and to become a source of ideas, of thoughts, of contributions to Seder night. Make some notes. Make some notes in a little notebook and bring the notebook to the Seder table and participate. I must say, I grew up in a household where on every Seder night, my mother said as much Divrei Torah as my father did. And she was very active in ideas and Divrei Torah. And in fact, my earliest memories of learning Torah was learning Chumash Rashi with my mother for a few minutes before I went to school as a 7-year-old, 8-year-old kid. She would sit down with me for a few minutes and learn with me one or two psukim of Chumash Rashi. She was a big fan of Chumash Rashi. And it's my earliest memories. I mean, she had to bribe me a little bit with some of her freshly baked cakes and my favorite drinks, but that was my earliest sweet memories of my mother, Zichron Livracha, who was a very knowledgeable woman and a great Yirei Shamayim, and always enjoyed saying and learning Divrei Torah for her whole life. She passed away about 3 years ago and left a tremendous legacy in the family of women involved in Talmud Torah, in learning and in contributing the content of Seder night and indeed every Shabbos and Yom Tov table. So this is something I think which needs to be focused on and could be an opportunity, particularly this year with fewer people at the table. It means that everybody has a great opportunity to be themselves, not a spectator, but to fulfill the mitzvah properly, the mitzvah which every man and woman has of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. I've entitled my shiur today, Two Stories, and I haven't yet related to the whole idea of two stories, so maybe I'd like to do that now. Let me give you a bit of background to the whole text of the Haggadah itself. We don't know, actually, who was the final author of what we call the Haggadah. Haggadah itself was put together over a few centuries during the time of the Gaonim. And the exact text that we have today was put together just over 1,000 years ago. But the Gar'in, the root of the Haggadah, already exists in the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, in the 10th chapter of Psachim, of the Maseches Psachim, in the 10th chapter, there are a few Mishnayot which tell us what to say on Seder night. How do we say the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim? What are we supposed to talk about? But it's important to know that what the text of the Haggadah is, if you like, only the minimum text. As we say in the Haggadah, B'chol HaMarbeh HaRezeh Meshubach, the more you can say about it, the better it is. The text of the Haggadah is not meant to be the maximum text. It's the minimum text, and everybody has to add to it and explain it and delve into it a little bit and think it through. And that's what I'm trying to do today, to give you a little bit of additional ideas about how to proceed in that direction. So in the Gemara in Psachim, in Daf Kuf Tes Zayin, page 116, the Mishnah brings down sort of step by step how to go through Leil Seder. But it doesn't give us the text. It does say to us, though, four words, which are the guiding words for later on the Gemara to flesh out a little bit what might be the best way to fulfill this mitzvah. Don't forget, the goal of this mitzvah is to fulfill the mitzvah min HaTorah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim, V'higadta Levincha. So the Mishnah says, four words. The four words are matchil begnut umasayim b'shevach. Maschil begnus means you should start off the story telling the gnus. The gnus means, if you like, the negative side of the story. The suffering, the difficulties, the problems that we encountered, the hardships that the Jewish people had, the distance that they were away from the eventual gula. Umasayim b'shevach. And then at the end, you tell about the tremendous geula and the solution and the way the story ends. In other words, don't speak initially, don't start off speaking about how great it was that Klal Yisrael were brought out of Mitzrayim. You first have to spend some time speaking matchil begnut. You have to speak about the hardships and the difficulties that the Jewish people had. And then the geula, the idea of the redemption from these hardships, becomes more meaningful and becomes more powerful. So these four words are very important. You can find them in the Mishnah, in the 10th chapter of Psachim, in the Gemara Psachim, Daf 116a, it says, Matchil Bigunut Umasayim B'Shevach. You start with a description of the disaster, and then you end up with explaining how wonderful the Geula, in fact, was. Then the Gemara goes on to discuss, what does it mean, Matchil Bignut Messiah B'Shevach? And there's a very interesting debate there between Rav and Shmuel, two of the earliest Amoraim. We're talking about the authors of the Gemara from roughly about the third century of the Common Era. And they are explaining the Mishnah. what would be an application of Matchil Begenut and Messiah B'Shevach. So Rav says, what is really the story of Seder night? The story is, Mitchila Ovdei Avodah Zarah Hoyu Avoseinu. In the beginning, our ancestors were pagans. V'achshav Kervano Hamokam La'Avodosa. And now we live a life of Avodat Hashem, of the service of God. In other words, Rav is saying the main story of Seder night is the journey from paganism to Emunah, from materialism to a spiritual way of life. That's the story of Seder night. The Jewish people began their lives immersed in a pagan, materialistic, corrupt culture, and eventually HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed them the way out. And they eventually ended up living a life of Avodat Hashem. So that's the real story, says Rav. And when you get to that paragraph in the Haggadah, it starts with the word Mitchila. In the beginning, of the Avodah Zarah, we were pagans. Why are we saying that? That's not a very big compliment for us. It's not a lovely thing to say about us, about how our ancestors were in fact completely pagan, materialist, corrupt society. But it's all part of the sequence of ideas of Seder night. But we start with saying how terrible things were and how they improved, and eventually we arrived at the Geulat Mitzrayim, the redemption from Egypt. So Rav says that's the story. Comes along Shmuel, who was his contemporary, and he said, no, that's a very nice idea, of course. Obviously, Avram and Sarah and Ovis chose out of the spirit, but that's not the story of Seder night. The story of Seder night is Avodim Hayinu Lefaro B'Mitzrayim Vayotzeinu Hashem Misham B'Yad Chazak V'Zeron Tuyah. In other words, Shmuel says the story of Seder night was that we were suffering, physical suffering, political suffering. We were crushed into slavery by a nation of tyrants and power, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu extracted us from that physical suffering and brought us into freedom. That's the story of Seder night. And you and I both know that the text of the Haggadah that we have weaves together both of these themes. But it's interesting to speak about the difference between these two themes. There is a theme of spiritual journey, and then there is a physical political journey. These two journeys take place at the same time, and on Leil Seder, they sort of converge. Leil Seder is a time when both the spiritual and the physical disasters of Klal Yisrael suddenly turned a corner, and we were on our way towards a gula. And that's the debate between Rav and Shmuel. Rav and Shmuel both accept the statement of the Mishnah, Matchil B'Gnut U'Messiah B'Shevach, but they interpret it differently. And by the time you get to the Rambam, writing in the Mishnah Torah 850 years ago, the Rambam already puts together both of these themes into one Haggadah text. So the Rambam already had a Haggadah text, and that was put together sometime between the end of the writing of the Talmud, which is about the 5th, 6th century, and the Rambam's life 500 years later, 500-600 years later. Sometime during that time, the Gaonim, the Jewish people, the Gedolei Yisrael of the Gaonim, put together the text of the Haggadah that we have today. And it must have been at that time, because it preceded the bifurcation, the difference between the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim. Ashkenazim and Sephardim both have the same Haggadah, with very small, slight differences, but that substantively, the Haggadah of the Ashkenazim and the Sephardim is exactly the same text. So it must have preceded the time of the Rishonim, which saw the divergence between Ashkenaz and Sephardim. So basically, it comes back to the Gemara of Rav and Shmuel. So on Seder night, we need to really be aware of the fact that the story that we're telling has got two different sides to it. One is a spiritual journey, and one is a physical national journey. So the national journey and the spiritual journey, both of them really were, if you like, the the creation of the Jewish people took place on Leil Seder. Before Leil Seder, we were just an enslaved, crushed nation with no future. After Leil Seder, we were on our path to become Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh, to really to become a great and powerful and unique nation with the Torah and with Eretz Yisrael. All this is the all this is part of the meaning of Seder night. I'll come back to that in a minute, but I think it's important to note that we normally speak about the four kosot, the four cups of wine that we drink, as being connected to four expressions that the Torah uses at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises Moshe Rabbeinu, "V'hotzeisi, v'itzalti, v'go'alti, v'lokachti." Four different words used describing the Yitziat Mitzrayim, the Exodus from Egypt. Each one of them describes a different facet of the way in which the Jewish people were extracted from Egypt and given a new destiny. But what's interesting is, as you all know, we have a fifth cup of wine sitting on the table, the Kos Shel Eliyahu. And it's worth talking about the Kos Shel Eliyahu, which is sitting there throughout the whole Seder night doing pretty much nothing. It's just sitting there. And the story of the fifth Kos is in itself a subject for a very interesting share. How did it come to be and what it signifies? But very simply, if you go back to Parshas Vayera and you look at the origin of these four expressions, you will find that there is also a fifth expression. Because it doesn't just say, V'hotzeisi eschem, V'itzalti eschem, V'go'alti, V'lokachti. It continues to say, V'heveisi eschem el ha'aretz. I will bring you to Eretz Yisrael. Now it's interesting that the bringing to Eretz Yisrael was not included in Seder night. That Seder night is not about that. Of course, everyone understands that the Jewish people proceeded, and under the leadership of Yahushua, they entered Eretz Yisrael. And again, in a sense, if you look at the book of Yahushua, chapters 1 and 2, you will see the very first thing they did when they came into Eretz Yisrael was they reenacted Seder night. They did a bris milah, and they brought the Korban Pesach. And that was the very, very first thing they did, and that was, if you like, the mafteach. That was the key to Eretz Yisrael. So Seder night also contains that connection to Eretz Yisrael. But on our Seder, the way we celebrate Seder night, the Arba Kosot do not include that theme. That theme of Heveti Etchem El Ha'aretz is represented by the Kos Shel Eliyahu Hanavi. The Kos Shel Eliyahu, the fifth cup of Eliyahu Hanavi, we pour it out and we put it on the table and it's standing in front of us throughout the whole evening, but we don't drink it. We don't drink it. We don't drink it because to symbolize the fact that we haven't completely got there yet. Even though you and I know that in our generation we've been given this amazing gift from our HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be able to live in Eretz Yisrael and to settle Eretz Yisrael and to develop it and to protect it. And certainly we are seeing a most amazing new chapter in the life of the Jewish people. But that new chapter in the life of the Jewish people is represented on the Seder night. Where is it represented? We don't speak about it. We speak about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and then we're going to Har Sinai. Where is represented on Seder night the fact that we are really on our way to Eretz Yisrael, and that we have the promise of settling and living in Eretz Yisrael? That is the Kos Shel Eliyahu Hanavi. That cup of Eliyahu Hanavi, which is there, but we don't drink it yet, because we can only drink it when Eliyahu Hanavi comes, and that's the time of Yerushalayim HaBenuyah, when Yerushalayim is not just a Jewish state, but it is a Jewish state which has a connection to Torah and Mitzvahs, where the Har HaBayis doesn't have a mosque on it, but it has a Beis HaMikdash on it, and that is that's our ultimate goal. So I think it's worth mentioning, worth talking about, and you can speak about that at any particular moment when there's a lull in the Seder night. You can say, let me speak for a few minutes about Kos Shel Eliyahu Hanavi. It's sitting in front of us the whole night. What does it represent? What does it mean? So if you have a look, if you have a look at the psukim at the beginning of Parshas Vayera, you can read them out, if you like, on Seder night. And you could see, Va'otzeisi eschem mitach ha-siblos mitzrayim, Va'otzeisi, v'itzalti eschem me'avodosom, right? V'go'alti eschem, right? And then v'lokachti eschem. And then the next passage says, v'heivesi eschem el ha'aretz. I will bring you to the land. And that is, in a sense, the fifth of the Lashonot Geula. It's the fifth expression of Geula, which we avoid on Leil Seder, because Leil Seder is actually not relating to that particular point, but it is symbolized in the fifth cup of wine. There's a lot more to speak about in the fifth cup of wine, but the kosher liyar navi, I think, particularly for our generation, anything you want to say about coming to Eretz Yisrael and living in Eretz Yisrael, and that we have now had the zechus to be part of that generation, to settle and conquer and live and bring Kedusha into the land of Eretz Yisrael, that is something which is symbolized by the kos shel Eliyahu HaNavi. And that is the ultimate goal. So just to summarize, I can see I'm coming up, Zamira, I can see you're back online here. Just to summarize, I would say to you all, when it comes to cleaning for Pesach, do a minimal clean. How to do a minimal clean? Speak to your rabbonim, speak to people who are knowledgeable in halacha. Do it in a way which makes the house kosher to Pesach. But this year we can avoid many chumras, which normally will be part of our pre-Pesach work. Make sure that when you're sitting at the Seder table, you're able not just to sit there and be a spectator, but to be a contributor, to say Divrei Torah, to say ideas, doesn't matter who else is at the table and who isn't. Make the evening meaningful for yourselves and for everybody else by coming with notes and with ideas, with material all along the way, starting from the very, very beginning of the Leil Seder. You will see that even before you make Kiddush, say a few words about what is Kiddush, what is it about, that it's the first of the four cups, that it's Sara Imenu. And also you can also list, it's important, I think, a lot along the way to list the 15 stages of Seder night. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rochta, Moti, Matza, the 15 stages are written in every Haggadah. And it's not by chance that there are 15, because you could mention that a little bit as well. The number 15 in the Torah tradition has a particular significance, which is connected to the Har HaBayit, to the Beit HaMikdash, and to the Shir HaMa'alot. There are 15 Shir HaMa'alot chapters. Why are there 15 Shir HaMa'alot? Because what does Ma'alot mean? Ma'alot means steps. La'alot means to go up one level. So every one of the 15 Shir HaMa'alot takes you up one level. And that was in the Beis HaMikdash. There were 15 steps leading up to the Azara. But each one of those steps was one of the Levi'im, or a few of the Levi'im, singing one of these Shir HaMa'alot, the song of the steps in the Beis HaMikdash. But we don't have a Beis HaMikdash yet. We have a Har HaBayis, but sadly, we can't use it properly yet. But on a Seder night, we have 15 steps on Seder night. Kadesh, Urchatz, Karpas, Yachatz, Magid, Rochtza, Motzi, Matza, Mora, Korech, Shulchan, Orech, Sofun, Borech, Halel, Nirtza. There are 15 steps. And this is taking us to the eventual climax of the evening, where we have been through the Leil Seder and we have been participated in both the mitzvah of Matzah. Right? Everybody has to eat their matzah. You have to eat the matzah twice, incidentally. Maybe this is a good reminder for you. There are two times, there are two separate mitzvot on Leil Seder to eat the matzah. One is the first kazayit, when you make the bracha, al achilas matzah, and you have to lean a little bit to the left and eat your kazayit matzah. And then the second mitzvah is the afikoman. The afikoman is at least as important as the first kazayis. Most people are just a bit tired and a bit fed up maybe by the time you get to the afikoman, but it's important to note that the afikoman is an extremely important part of Seder night. According to some of the Rishonim, the Ikar mitzvah, the main mitzvah of eating matzah on Seder night, according to Rashi, for example, the Rashbam, He is the last Kazaias, is the Kazaias of the Afikoman, which at the time of the Beis Hamikdash was eaten together with the meat of the Korban Pesach. Amatzos Umrorim Yochluhu was the very, very last Kazaias that was eaten al hasova, after you'd eaten the meal, instead of a dessert. Don't prepare any desserts for your meal on Seder night. Just give matzah. And everybody has to lean a bit to the left and eat the matzah for Afikoman. And these are the two great mitzvahs that we're going to have, please God, in 2 weeks' time. Tonight is already Rosh Chodesh Nisan and the beginning of the month of the Geula. And my final bracha to all of us is that the Gemara says in Rosh Hashanah that B'nissan Nigalu B'nissan Asidin Lihigoel, which means that Nisan was not only the time of the original Geula of Mitzrayim, but it is in fact the Shoresh, the root for all future Geulas, for all future redemptions. We are always in need of the ultimate Geula, but in the meantime, we need a Geula from this nega, from this plague that surrounds us. We need to protect ourselves, and we need a special siyata d'shamayim from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And please God, this month of Nisan should see a redemption from this terrible plague and from the dangers and the ill health that surrounds us. Protect yourselves, ladies, protect your families. Have a wonderful, wonderful Pesach, and be contributors to Seder night.